It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up! Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with...
Eric Billingsley.
Tim Mattson.
And Isaac Wilson. Hey, don't interrupt my intro. It's my spotlight.
Yeah, it's Isaac's only spotlight in life is that intro. But anyway, we're here for another episode. And this time around, we've been geeking out online, chatting with each other. And it's like, you know what? We need to record this. So we're doing it this time. Nothing in particular. I mean, we are going to talk about Civil War. Tim Mattson's going to talk about some virtual reality. And Isaac and I are going to just throw in a whole bunch of movies. And also, Eric has been... forced him into reading comic books again.
At gunpoint.
Unfortunately, he's spending his time reading comic books, which, well, actually, that's a great thing. I don't care what anybody says. So, well, let's start out here. First of all, again, we have to give our shout out to the Eagle Theater once again for providing an awesome experience in the theater. First of all, I love the cherry Dr. Pepper that I can make at the fountain soda. I don't know what it is, but being able to make my own soda like that is awesome. And, of course, their flavor bar for the popcorn. And free popcorn Thursdays. Yeah, that's it. By the way, if you ever go to the Eagle Theater, make sure you mention that you heard about it on the podcast. It's either the Eagle Theater in Robinson or the Clintonian Eagle in Clinton, Illinois. And if you go on a Thursday night and mention that you heard it on a podcast, they'll give you free popcorn.
Plus, they'll think you're really cool.
Well, that too, yeah. Just let them know you heard us. Let them know that you're cool. Great theater for a small town in Robinson anyway. I have yet to go to the Clintonian Eagle. Maybe we should make a road trip.
So since we're going to be talking about Supergirl this episode, would you say it's a great theater for a Smallville?
No.
Whoa.
No. No.
I see what you did.
I see what I did,
but too. Anyway, so we saw a couple movies. Actually, I saw one, and Isaac and I both saw one together. First, we'll talk about the one we saw together, which was surprisingly really good. And the problem is, I made the mistake of looking at Rotten Tomatoes before we went to see it, and it built up my expectations because they had a 99% audience rating and a 96% critics rating. And I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And I really shouldn't have done that because if it wasn't awesome, I would have been really let down. But it actually turned out to be really good and very entertaining. Zootopia is the latest animated project that's out. I forget what studio did it or whatever. But I can tell you this much. Jason Bateman plays a fox really well. But Jason Bateman really pulled it off on his role. Tommy Chong played a stoner yak.
It's a Disney film.
Is it Disney? Okay.
Yeah, it's Disney.
Wow, that surprised me for Disney, because they had Tommy Chong playing a stoner yak. I mean... In a nudist colony, yes. there was that. There's also, and again, it's been out a couple weeks now, so this is not a spoiler, because if you haven't seen it by now, shame on you. But... I will tell you, there's a reference to Breaking Bad in this movie, and it's hilarious. Basically, what it is that the animals are going back to feral. You know, all the predators are, anyway. And basically, the movie's message is race relations and how we should all just get along.
Animal racism.
Yeah, animal racism. Anyway, there's
they're going back to feral, the guy in the Arlie Army hat that seems happy?
No, that's Pharrell.
Oh, that's right.
No, they're going back to the... the guy that played Anchorman.
Ah. You guys are just going to do this all night if I let you. But anyway,
imagine a world where everybody was singing happy all the time. What a nightmare.
Wasn't that 2013? That was just the year of 2013.
Yeah, it really was.
The entire year it was.
Just the entire year, yeah.
Oh, man. What was the song in there? There's a song that's in that movie. It was in the background that that's totally not related.
It's called Happy by Pharrell.
No.
It's Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up.
No, definitely not.
Right.
But anyway, there's a scene where they're going feral. What it is this one group of prey, they're wanting the predators to be put away. Because they're predators. And even though for centuries the animals have gotten along, someone's trying to put up a fence, so to speak, or put up a wall. And they're having and they're making the predators build it.
Donald Trump. I'm trying to think of an animal pun for his name.
Anyway.
Donald Trunk.
Yeah, sure. But anyway.
Donald Skunk.
There we go.
But the jackass comes to mind, but go ahead.
So anyway, they go on and they're building a chemical compound out of this plant. It's a blue plant. And so they're in this subway car, which looks a lot like a Winnebago, and on the insides of it anyway. And so they're building up this blue liquid that's hardened, and they're going to that's liquid, the blue liquid they're going to spray over all the predators so that they become feral, and not will or not feral. So I'm stopping you right now. And so then basically he's in this, and he's in one of those hazmats, a yellow hazmat suit with the gas mask, just like in Breaking Bad. And the whole time they're doing this, Isaac and I are thinking, "Huh, look, it's Walter White," you know, making little jokes. And we're in a crowded theater. This was the second week it was out. We figured we'd go in the second week because it wouldn't be crowded with kids. Wrong. It was crowded with kids. Every seat was taken. All kids, with a few parents, of course. And we're sitting there, and we're just whispering back and forth, "Oh, look, it's Walter White," you know. And then the guy gets on the phone while the cops are hiding inside this Winnebago, waiting to spring into action. Anyway, he's on the cell phone, and he goes, "Yeah, I got the product just about finished, ready for dispersal." And then he goes, "Oh, hold on, someone's at the door." And he goes to the door, and he goes, "Oh, Walt and Jesse are here." And Isaac and I just burst out laughing. We're the only ones in the theater that laughed. Just did Breaking Bad in a Disney film. All in all, I will say that it was mildly pleasant to just sit there and watch this really beautiful animation, and the representation of the animals and the different aspects of their personalities as they brought out and made the race relations almost hit you in the head with it, especially with the song that Shakira sang. So it is basically race relations. If the kids got it, which I'm pretty sure they did. They did their job well. As an adult watching this, you knew exactly what they're talking about halfway through the film, at least if you were smart or had some sense of brains anyway. It was a very pleasant film. The dialogue was all really, realistic. It wasn't like, happy little bunnies in a forest. But it could have been.
I thought it was a really fun film. We saw it down here, too. We really enjoyed it a lot.
Now, what do you think about the message, the race relations message?
I think it's a message that, given our current climate, we could a large segment of our population could stand a refresher course on.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
And I don't think the movie was overly heavy-handed. I think it's, we need to remember this is a movie for families and children, and
right.
I think it was the tone of the thing was perfectly in line with that type of thinking, but at the same time, I think that it's something that adults can go and watch and have a great time because it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
The script keeps moving it along, and the characters are quite endearing, and the animation is beautiful.
Yes, yes.
It's clearly resonating with people because it was Disney's largest opening yet.
Oh, that's right. I mean, yeah.
It topped Frozen. The thing has made $500 million worldwide to date. So,
wow.
I'd say it's quite a success, and I think it's a testament to their studio that they turned out such a great film. Yeah. Interesting thing of note, I don't know if you guys know this or not. This is some articles I read earlier before going to see this. The film had an entirely different main character going into the final leg of production. They had to go back in and redo a large chunk of the film and re-record dialogue and make major changes to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. The original main character was the fox.
Oh, wow.
The film was all about him, and they realized that they needed a different main character.
Yeah, I can
and
see
so
that.
So they totally changed it up and had the little bunny become the main character for the film.
I can see that. That would have been, it seems like it would have been a completely different film.
Spinoff film win.
Yeah. Here's the way I relate this to. I read a Isaac Asimov book that was written by, it was actually a group of books that were written by different authors. And I read the book and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is juvenile. This is like, they're just hitting me over the head with how childlike this is. And I wrote a review on it online, and I never thought anything about it. Well, the author of the book emailed me. He goes, "Well, it was written for young adults." And I'm like, I never realized that. And so he goes, "Yeah." He said, "We were given," and he actually went into detail about this. He said, "We were given the premise of the story, and we were told," and this is one thing he was frustrated with. He said, "We were told 10 to 12 year olds. And when the books all came out, they were supposed to have been for like teens, like 16, actually, I think he said 16 to 18 or something like that." Yeah, and he wrote his for even younger audience. So he said, "Yeah, mine was written for younger, but we were told that." And so that's what I kind of take this as, like, yeah, I was in there as an adult watching this, thinking that, you know, they're hitting me over the head with this at times. You know, like I said, that Shakira song really just was the final blow for me. But then again,
that song was terrible.
I hated that. Yes.
That song was straight up trash.
Yes.
It was a bad song.
I'm surprised Shakira would have done that. But anyway, so, you know, and so I'd say, you know, yeah, I'm an adult watching this, and the kids probably get it. If they get it, and again, I don't know any kids that were personally there that I can ask, but got the message. But if they did, it's like, you know, good. You know, I love that because, like I said, like you said, I'm sorry, Tim, that we needed this. At this time in our societies,
I think it the thing is that's nice about it is I don't think any of the kids, little kids, left this thinking, oh wow, that was a really interesting take on race relations.
Right.
No, I mean it was just a good film about how you treat others and
yes.
how this should work as a society, how we should work as a society, and I think that's an underappreciated message, and I think it's really something that we obviously need to hear again and again because we forget.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, exactly. So, well, let me ask Isaac. He's not quite the audience they were aiming for, but being a 15-year-old going on 40, how did you perceive it? What, I mean, I know we had fun laughing at stuff, but how did you perceive it at your age?
Well, before I say that anything about that, I've just got to point out one of the songs in this soundtrack is You Fell For It, E-W-E. At the end of the movie, you know, how the female lamb is the anyway.
Yeah, we got anyway. It.
I don't know. I felt like a lot of the soundtrack is animal puns, too. But I don't know. I feel like it was a little bit over the top with the racism and stuff and all the, what is it?
We should all get along?
Yeah, all the message. But the thing is, since it was meant for young kids, I guess it's kind of got to be over the top to, like, get in their thick little skulls where everything just pops back out. It's kind of like whenever you're packing a suitcase and nothing fits in, so you have to sit on it until it all stays in and you latch it.
Oh, yeah. But see, the thing was that the fox and the rabbit, I mean, I thought that was the perfect pairing to bring across this message. Fox and rabbit, you know, they're known, foxes, I mean, throughout all Aesop's fables and all that good stuff, you know, they're known to hunt, foxes are known to hunt rabbits. So
that and a policeman and a thief.
Yeah, yeah,
well, hustler,
yeah, con man,
hustler.
Let's talk real quick. Actors doing the voices for this. Like I said, Tommy Chong doing a stoner yak at a nudist colony. that was entertaining, and you know that was aimed for the adults that were bringing their kids into this movie. But Idris Elba as the water buffalo cop, is that what
Chief Bogo? Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean. That was a surprise, but my gosh, it was really good. Oh gosh, yeah, the mayor.
I mean, J.K. Simmons.
The mayor, J.K. Simmons.
Octavia Spencer, Alan Tudyk, Bonnie Hunt, Jennifer Goodwin. I mean, there was a lot of good talent in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, and Alan Tudyk, I thought, was underused. He was that weasel guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, man, but because when I was looking up the reviews before we went, I saw that he was in it. And being a Joss Whedon fan, Alan Tudyk in this, I was like, oh, cool, this will be neat. But I thought he's underused. I mean, yeah, they had a huge amount of voice actors that were, you know, like you said, Bonnie Hunt, J.K. Simmons as the mayor. I kept wanting to give me pictures of Spider-Man. It would have been cool. But then Spider-Man would have actually been a spider, you know. But anyway, so what do you think about the performances of these, you know, pretty big names, actually?
Oh, I thought it was quite good. You know, Jason Bateman plays a reliable sleaze. You know, it's kind of in his wheelhouse. This character is kind of smarmy, kind of smart mouth, and, you know, hyper intelligent, very verbose. I mean, I think it's something he does. He could probably do in his sleep at this point.
Yeah, true.
But really, they were great. I think him and Jennifer Goodwin both had quite a good chemistry, and they were very relatable as characters. And
yeah,
I enjoyed their story. I was happy to watch it, and I would probably watch the inevitable sequel too.
Yeah, inevitable. Yeah, you're right. I mean, like I said, I went in there over expecting. But was not let down, and because I had a good time watching this film. Before I jump onto the next movie, Tim, did you see 10 Cloverfield Lane?
No, I have not. So if you spoil it, I'm going to drive to Illinois and punch you in the throat.
Okay, let's see. It's about 12-hour trip, 18-hour trip?
You got 12 hours before you get up.
All right.
Leave it now.
I'm ready now. All right, I'll try not to spoil it. Well, all right. Okay. So I went and saw 10 Cloverfield Lane. Isaac allowed me to go with my lovely wife, and I don't know whether she liked it or not, but she walked out with a smile on her face. So, you know, she's one of those. She's very hard to please when it comes to movies. And but I can tell you that I had a good time. And without I don't want to give away any spoilers because I know Tim.
I've got my keys right here.
Because I don't have.
Letting you know.
I don't think I have enough gas in my car to get away fast enough for 18 hours. But anyway, all right. Let's put it this way: John Goodman, super creepy, and I'll tell you what—that guy's got a huge catalog of roles that he's played, and everyone has got its own little unique aspect to it. And John Goodman is just one of those versatile actors. I could watch anything he does. And
who does not love John Goodman?
Exactly. So, right. I mean, you know, you got Roseanne, you've got West Wing, you've got The Big Lebowski. I mean, there's just, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And now this. Now this one, I would say that this is one of the most darkest characters I've seen him play that I can remember. The movie, you never know what kind of movie it is until almost the very end. And this is where I will not say anything to that almost the very end part, so that Tim doesn't have to make that drive. But basically,
I'm tired, guys. I don't want to drive 12 hours.
I know, right? I don't want to make you either. I don't want to be responsible for that. But throughout the movie, I mean, you know exactly what happened to the lady. She gets in a car wreck and she wakes up in this handcuffed to the wall of this bomb shelter, basically, and. As it goes on, there's another person in the bomb shelter, and throughout the movie, you know, he says, "I'm protecting you from the world. It's nothing but the air has been poisoned. There was something about Russians dropping bombs. They've said that a few times, and so you're thinking, okay, yeah, maybe he's protecting her, but why is she handcuffed? You know, and then it lets her out of that, and then I don't know. The whole movie, you're going back and forth from, is this, of course, with the name Cloverfield. You know, is this an alien monster movie? Is it just a stalker movie where, you know, he holds her captive? Is it, what is it? You know, and throughout the movie, you're wondering, you're trying to figure it out. Now, I will give you a matter of fact here that about halfway through, I figured it out and knew. But there's some times that came up after I figured it out that, like, well, wait a minute, maybe not. And so you really don't know until almost the very end. Then the very end. Wow. That's where I'll leave off. But I will tell you, I had a good time being creeped out by John Goodman. And in fact, through the most of the movie, again, this is like a post-apocalyptic type of a setting is supposed to be. Again, you don't really know. They've been in the bunker for a few days, weeks even, and he's got the scraggly beard thing going because, you know, they don't really have time to shave and all that good stuff. So they're just trying to survive. Well, there's one point in the movie where he shaves, and he's even creepier than before. It's just like, wow. He's supposed to be clean cut now, but no, he's even creepier. And but like I said, it's a John Goodman movie, worth seeing. He rocks the role. Ooh, that's a good pun. I like that. But he just makes that movie what it is. Oh man, I'm so badly want to give some spoilers, so I won't. But I'll stop there. But it's worth seeing. And Tim, you have to go see it. And I want to know what you thought of it.
Directed by.
Yeah, I intend to see it. Oh man, there's a there's a hot debate going on down here amongst me and several other folks that I know about going to movie theaters, and I have to say. I hate going to movie theaters anymore. It's really
You've got your own screening room.
It's not just that. But yes, I do have a freaking amazing place to watch movies if I so choose. But you know, you can't watch Deadpool here legally,
right? right.
But you know, there's this proposition out there. The guy that founded Napster is talking about releasing a set-top box. Where you can pay $50 and watch a movie that's currently in theaters for a limited amount of time. There's a certain window. They're trying to negotiate how long that window is and how long you can watch it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And to me, that is manna from heaven, because the movie theater experience has deteriorated to the point where I just don't want to go. I will tell you, yeah, I do want to go see 10 Cloverfield Lane, but it's going to be work getting me there. Because we went to see Deadpool, and I had a great time, and I loved that movie, but I honestly, and I wouldn't have to drive to Illinois to do this, I wanted to throat punch the guy behind me and his girlfriend, because they talked through the entire thing, and not just occasionally, literally through every scene, they were discussing what was going on. He was filling her in on things she didn't know. She was asking questions. And then she was commenting on what she thought of it. And I was like, listen, there are people around you that are not interested in your commentary track.
Right. Right.
People have no consideration anymore. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
They don't. And there are, you know, I have friends, you know, a couple guys I know down here actually own and run movie theaters. And they were very upset that I would support this. And I'm like, look, you dudes are not, you're not offering a service that would entice me to go and spend money at your place.
Right.
Because it's a crapshoot. I can throw down my money and maybe I'll have a good time. Probably not. In my experience lately, probably not. Occasionally, yes, I'll have a great time. I'll be happy I spent my money there and I will go home happy. But easily 50 to 60% of the time, I do not.
You know,
I don't feel sorry for movie theaters if they don't step up their game and police their audience and get people to shut the hell up,
exactly.
Turn off their phones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to cost them money to make it happen. But if there was a theater in town that had ushers in every theater, I would pay an extra $3 or $4 to go to that theater. And that would be my only theater I ever attend.
You know,
if a theater had a reputation of actually kicking people out for talking and using their cell phone and being assholes, I would gladly pay extra money to go to that theater.
Yeah,
absolutely. But I guarantee it, the movie theaters are going to be slow to react to this. And this is going to happen. You're going to be able to watch a movie that gets released. We're going to be able to watch it at home for a fee, and we will not have to go to the movie theaters. And that's going to spell the end of a lot of movie theaters.
Yeah.
And I do not feel bad for them.
Well, see, and that's one of the reasons why my wife doesn't like movies or going to the movies, is that fact that, you know, you're supposed to be sitting in a – I mean, that's the purpose. You're in a dark room watching the big screen, quiet, you know. I know as when I was younger, this back in my day, basically you'd go to a theater, people were quiet, and you know you watched it. Now, like you said, cell phones, people talking, giving commentary. I mean, I don't know what it is. I heard someone say Rocky Horror Picture Show ruined it for everyone. I'm like, no, I don't think that's the case. But
no.
I think a lot of it is that, you know, people think they can just talk. They think they're in their living room.
They think they're Joel Hodgson.
Yeah. Hodgson. No, not even that. They're not even that good. But they think they're in their living room. And, you know, when you go to a kid's like Zootopia. We went and saw Zootopia. Kids, you expect that to happen. That's why Isaac and I waited, but still,
actually,
it was still crowded.
At Zootopia, it wasn't even that loud.
Yeah, that's true. The kids were actually into the movie.
100%. We had a better time at Zootopia. We saw Zootopia and Deadpool like pretty much back to back within a few days of one another.
Right.
And Zootopia, hands down, was a much better experience.
Yeah.
Because the kids were attentive. Mm-hmm. They were into the film. And they kind of understood what they were doing. There were some little kids that were like, what's he doing? Who is that? You know, little questions. But that was incredibly rare. And like you said, totally understandable.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And because that's for the kids and they're not, you know, but the adults that do it, they just don't care. I mean, especially.
No, that's it. They don't care.
Yeah. And they I mean,
it's like
the cell phones is the worst. That's the one that bugs me the most. I mean, at the beginning of the movies, they have those advertisements running, you know, and all that good stuff. One of them, I mean, at several times before the movie starts, they have this turn off your cell phone thing. And every time,
yeah.
I always, whenever I see that, even if I know I turned it off, I pull mine out just to double check.
double check
and make sure it's turned off. And
I go further than that. If there's anybody with me, I say loud enough so the people around me can hear, did you guys turn off your cell phones? Okay, cool. I'm going to turn mine off.
Yeah.
And whatever it takes to kind of give people the hint around.
Hey,
you know?
Look at me. I'm turning off my cell phone so I'm not an ass.
Yeah, it's essentially, it really is, it's quite a pantomime. You guys would enjoy going to a film with me because, you know, I put on a little pre-show for the audience, you know, the saga of the cell phone and the guy that gets throat punched halfway through the film.
Maybe we should get you.
I'm not a violent person, but the closest I've come to getting into a fist fight since graduating from high school has been in movie theaters with people who wouldn't shut the F up.
I got to admit, I embarrassed my kids to death. To this day, neither one of them can bring themselves to watch Super 8 because when we walked out of the screening of that, I was yelling and screaming at this asshole in the parking lot. I was so angry. I really wanted to just go and beat the crap out of him. I was so mad.
But I mean, there's no excuse for it. It's just downright selfishness. It's not like someone doesn't know. They know that people can hear them around, that people hear them talking. They just don't care. They're selfish, and that's the end of the story. Now, granted, let's differentiate about, you know, you were talking about an audience being quiet. I mean, there used to be an appeal of seeing a movie with a group of people, and if it's a comedy and everyone's laughing, it adds to the fun of seeing the movie.
Absolutely.
If it's a horror film and people are screaming and jumping and you know, that adds to the fun of it. But that's a completely different situation than someone sitting there and talking or punching in something on their cell phone, which shines like a beacon like a
dear God. It's like a lighthouse.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, believe me, I'm not asking people to just sit in reverent silence like it's church or anything.
Right.
I mean, just use a little common sense. Have a little common decency for the people around you who also paid money to see this.
Yeah.
You know, don't ruin someone else's experience just because you're a jerk and don't care. And yeah, man, I mean, I want that experience. There's a lot of value to be had in experiencing a great film in a darkened room with a whole group of people.
Yep.
Because that moment when you all react in unison to something,
right,
that's palpably exciting, and that's why movies are great.
Yeah, it's like with perfect example here, 10 Cloverfield Lane. There are some jump moments that are put in there as the relief, you know, so the audience can jump, and then everybody kind of look at each other and kind of, you know, we just get scared. You know, you have that moment, and those are fine. Those are acceptable. But like you said,
that's why they're there. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. But like you said, analyzing the whole movie the whole time or cell phones. Oh yeah. Well, I know one thing, and this is a great plug for the Eagle Theater. They don't have ushers, but if you do have a problem, you just go out to the management and they send somebody in there. And if you can point out, I've seen it happen before. If you can point out specifically which seat, they have that infamous, remember from our youth, the flashlight in the face. And they'll come up to that person and they'll flash it on them, and then they'll just kind of, you know, just walk away and stand there for a little while, and that seems to do the trick. Now, I'm not the person. Here's the reason: I'm not the person to do that. Not because it's like I don't want to be that guy, but the fact is, I want to sit there and watch the movie. I don't want to have to get up and tell these people.
I don't want to miss any of the movie while I'm going to complain to the manager.
Right.
It's not my job to police their audience.
Right.
It's
right.
Theirs.
Yeah, and I agree. I think ushers should be brought back into the theaters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Charge me more, please. Yeah. I will pay it.
Yeah, I know a lot of us will. Maybe they should have, like, just special theaters for, you know, quiet theaters that, you know, they're going to have that if that need it.
I think whenever I apply for the Eagle Theater, I'm probably going to apply as a shush ninja. Like the guys in the all-black suits that just go up to people, shh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if they still do this, but there used to be, some theaters used to have a policy of you couldn't bring in children under the age of like 6 or 7 after 7 o'clock.
Right.
Oh, man, they don't care about that anymore.
No, not anymore. But if they could bring back that, you know, that type of of control, then, you know, I'd be more than happy to go. But, well, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, someone's got to be there to enforce it.
Yeah, and the thing is, mainly what I know I'm talking about, it's not the children.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's
not the children.
Yeah, I want to say it's teenagers, but it's not even necessarily teenagers all the time either. It's adults too.
So. Yeah.
Dude, this was a grown ass man behind me.
Yeah.
And this girl, they were in their late 20s, and they were absolutely the rudest people that I have ever had the misfortune of sitting this close to without inflicting bodily harm.
If you go to 10 Cloverfield Lane, talk to the management, make sure you get the theater to yourself, because you're going to want to enjoy every aspect and every nuance. Or take a bunch of people that have duct tape or something. I don't know. But, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got those moments. So,
is the title of this episode just going to be Shut Up?
That's...
Please.
Welcome to the Shut Up Theater.
And honestly, I think I would be willing to pay more than $40 a week to Isaac to be my shush ninja.
I have skin suits, like plenty of them.
He's got awesome. Black one, too. Awesome. Yeah, there we go. All
Gil,
right.
Gil, we need to talk offline about having your kid transferred down here so that I can put him to good use.
We'll negotiate.
No, thanks. I think I've got a good shot at getting a job and getting paid here.
Well, he's going to pay me. And that's what counts.
Yeah, but how much is that? Is going to my college.
That's between you and me, or him and me.
It's subject to negotiation.
Yeah. So, speaking of movies, guys. Captain America Civil War came out and broke the freaking internet. Better than Kim Kardashian, if you ask me.
I was about to say.
And all because of one little character that I've been a fan of ever since when I was 5 years old. And I will tell you.
Black Panther.
Ant-Man?
When I saw this trailer, you know, everybody's been talking about Spider-Man coming into this. And he, in the Civil War comics, he played a major part. I mean, being a Spider-Man fan, I especially think it's a major part in the division between the two. Spider-Man in this, and they kept talking about him being in this. They made an agreement with Sony and all this good stuff. Never in the trailers. Then this trailer came out, and at the very last, what, 3-4 seconds maybe? There's Spider-Man, yeah. And that's all people are talking about. And I will tell you what, I saw that, and when Iron Man said, hey, under ruse, which I thought was hilarious, and then Spider-Man flips out there, I watched that part of the trailer like 30 or 40 times right then and there. And at the same time, I went back to that 5-year-old kid that found my dad's comic books and started reading them. Spider-Man especially.
He did the superhero landing.
That's quite a coincidence. A coincidence, because Spider-Man sounds like he's 5 years old.
Well, yeah, he does sound rather young.
Well, he is. He's supposed to be. He's supposed to be a teenager.
Dudes, he sounds like somebody who's 8 years old. I mean, he really does. Well, he sounds like a toddler.
And 8-year-olds have you been listening to?
Oh, the kind that smoke a lot.
Oh, those guys, yeah.
But the whole freaking trailer is really amazing.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
I mean,
It really is.
This is like the trailer of all trailers. I mean, for Civil War, this is better than any of those Avengers trailers that bring in all the heroes, because it's like an Avengers movie, but it's a Captain America movie, which I don't mind a bit, because I'm Team Cap anyway. You know what? Yeah, and every aspect of that trailer, from beginning to end, but like I said, my favorite was the end, but every aspect just broke the internet, you know, and made everybody say, hey, this is going to be one awesome movie when it comes out. Let's break it down a little bit. You got... First of all, you got a really nice look at Black Panther.
Yeah.
And his costume. He's getting shot by a helicopter and bullets just bouncing off that vibranium. Then you got the perfect. I thought this was the greatest Ant-Man on the Hawkeye arrow. That it's a major comic book cover. There's a cover of the Avengers where Ant-Man is on the tip of the arrow and it's like bursting out. If it's a 3D comic cover, it would have been really nice. Basically, that's an iconic cover right there. And they have that. They have the Ant-Man on the arrow. They have, Spider-Man. They have the battle, or the previous one, we just saw the battle between Iron Man, Bucky, and Captain America. And it was like, okay, that's cool, but this one just totally blew that one away. I was just overwhelmed by Spider-Man. And he looks like the old Steve Ditko Spider-Man. You know, it's not this 3D webbing thing that manufactured by Sony that there's no way Peter Parker could have made that suit, although the suit they're showing here is one that's made by Tony Stark. But all right, let's start with you, Tim Mattson. Tim, what did you think of the trailer, and what do you expect?
Well, I expect a movie that's probably got too many people in it, really, to be honest. I do. I mean, I'm not a fan of, more is better. I'm really not a believer in that. I think that Civil War is really, it's a landmark story in Marvel history, and I'm glad that they're telling it, but every superhero movie is better when there are fewer superheroes involved. Once you pass a certain point, it gets to be really samey, and nobody gets enough screen time to matter, and right. So, you know, that you end up being underwhelmed by about three quarters of the people in it. And so I kind of feel like this is going to be a really enjoyable and fun movie, but I don't expect it to be better than Winter Soldier, which I think is the highlight of the Marvel films. The entire run. I think Winter Soldier was probably the most perfectly executed comic book movie that we've ever had.
Yeah, I'd have to agree 100% on that.
And it's the same guys doing this that did Winter Soldier, so that gives me a lot of confidence.
It does. You know, I think they have a great handle on staging action that is easy to follow and isn't so chaotic that you don't know what the hell's going on. I'm hopeful. But again, you know, I think there are about six superheroes too many in this. And I got to say, I think the last trailer is much better than this one, because that beatdown that the Winter Soldier and Captain America are inflicting on Iron Man, that was amazing to see.
Yeah.
That was some stunning imagery in a trailer. Just the way they were coordinating their attacks and just absolutely pummeling him into the ground.
You know,
that's
got to be one of the best choreographed fight scenes so far in any of the Marvel movies, too.
Well, I mean, I could just see that more than anything I think I've ever seen is a comic book panel sprung into full life. Because I can see that being laid out as a splash page or, you know, a big gatefold kind of thing. I mean, it's beautiful, and that was stunning. And I really have to say, I didn't expect that Captain America would be my favorite run out of all of them, but he absolutely is. His films have been the best that Marvel has had to offer.
Yeah,
and that's really saying something, because we've had some really great films.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it goes to not only Marvel, but also Chris Evans. I mean, he's just made that character come alive.
Absolutely.
Because you got to admit, absolutely, Captain America is a hard character to bring to the public now. Well, maybe not now, but for the longest time, Captain America, you know, maybe he is now, because we don't really know what patriotism is anymore. But still,
I got to say, man, he's who we need. I mean, we could use some actual Captain America right now, someone who's not ashamed to be proud of his country, and who actually embodies what I think our country stands for, and you know, something that we've kind of forgotten along the way. It's really depressing, to be honest.
I mean, there's always the jokes that they play with Captain America, which are fun, you know, where someone will say a word, he'll say, you know, language.
Yeah.
That's kind of a running joke that we've gotten in at least a couple of the movies. And I think it even shows up here, and it's in the comics too.
Yeah.
At least what I've been reading, but I mean, we're going to talk about the comics in a bit here, but I mean, I've been getting a different perspective on Cap having read them. But he's this guy that was, frozen for many years, and so he's from a different time and a different America.
Right.
But because he was frozen and he carries these values forward. And he's exactly the hero that this country needs at the right time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that this is not something that escaped the filmmakers, because they've been really playing that to full advantage, especially in Winter Soldier, when he goes head to head with Nick Fury over, when he's overstepping his liberties and when he's infringing on our rights as Americans to privacy and what's right and what's wrong. It's very clear to him, and you need that perspective. No one has that perspective the way that Cap does.
And I think it's really telling that Captain America has been so successful right now. Can you imagine? And this has been on my mind. I have to tell you, this stuff has been on my mind a lot lately. What do you think someone who was, if you could grab someone from the 40s who was experiencing what we were doing during World War II and just brought them into the current day, how mind-blowing would it be for them to see what we've become?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, he left an era where they were fighting fascism in a united manner, and now you come to the modern day, and there's a new type of nationalism / fascism that I think is kind of rising in this country mm-hmm. right now with Donald Trump and his supporters. And I don't know, man. I think we could use some Captain America right about now.
Definitely something.
Hell yeah.
You know, and that's another thing with this Civil War. I mean, in the comics, you know, it was based on, bringing out the message that the Patriot Act isn't necessarily a good thing. This is, you know, post 9/11 that this was done. And I think that's one of the reasons why they made it a Captain America movie, is that it's still needed. You know, we still need to show, hey, we've got liberties. Okay, these superheroes need liberties and freedom too. But again, just like Zootopia was, you know, race relations, that's what this one's going to be for the adults, if they can get it. And if they play it off right, too. Now, playing on the thing, you say too many heroes, Tim. I will say that they're cutting way back on the heroes, according to the comics.
Yeah.
True, but still, for a movie, that's a lot. That's a lot to surface, because I don't think in the Avengers, especially the second one, there was a lot of people that got really brief amount of screen time, and I don't think that movie did many favors for the Vision, Scarlet Witch, or Quicksilver.
Right. Well, and then another thing,
especially not Quicksilver.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, I feel like it was relying on us just to take it on faith who they were, and they didn't really have to spend much time with it. These twins, one does magic, one runs fast. All right, moving on.
One's a bullet shield for Hawkeye.
Yeah, one's a shield.
Exactly. it didn't really service those characters. You didn't get to know them. The actors didn't have much to do. You know, I get it. I know there's a lot of people involved in this, but movies are different than comics.
Yeah.
With comics, you can do a lot with one panel. You can do a lot in one panel that you just can't do in films.
Now, another thing that might throw some optimism in this is that this is one of the longest Marvel films made.
It's the longest.
Is it the longest? Okay, the longest. 146 minutes, so maybe that's a little optimism thrown in there, but still, that's still a long movie, though.
When I first heard that they were doing The Avengers, now this is something that I, as a film fan, I was very aware of, is that when you've got more than one main character, it becomes problematic. And the more characters that you put as the main character, the more problematic that becomes. Now, you know, knowing that Joss Whedon was doing it, I was like, okay, well, if anyone can make this work, Joss can.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. I mean, the first Avengers did work, but every character in the Avengers was not the main character. I mean, you had really, it was Iron Man, and Iron Man really was the main character, and then you had a lot of secondary characters.
Really was, yeah.
Now, in the second Avengers, it was kind of a mess. I mean, I just rewatched it again recently, and it's just, it feels crowded. It feels like they're just trying to stuff too much into a limited amount of time, and it feels like they did a disservice to everyone involved. And especially, like you said, the twins, especially Quicksilver, you know, he gets barely any screen time, and then boom, he's, it's not a spoiler at this point.
Yeah, right.
You know, he's dead, and I keep hoping that, you know, that at some point they're going to somehow bring him back, because
it's a comic book movie.
I like the character, and I like the idea of the character.
I hope this is one thing they do not import from comics. I hope that guy stays dead forever. I never want to see that character again, unless it's in some sort of flashback. Yeah. I would be more than happy for Quicksilver to remain forever dead as a doornail.
Ouch. Well, not me, but
I would, and that's not a comment on the actor or the character, really. It's just, wow, am I just over character deaths? I mean, they mean nothing anymore.
Well, it's like that with comics in general. I mean, they always bring back a character.
Believe me, this is not news. This is not a new thing. It's not something they just recently started doing. But they've done it so much that it's become a joke, and it doesn't matter.
Right.
You're not going to fool anybody. You kill off a character in comics, nobody believes for a second that you've killed off a character.
Exactly.
They know that, you know, in 6 months, it'll be back. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
So well, it's funny you say that. One of the issues of the Road to Civil War that I just read, there's a side story with the Fantastic Four, and they have just like previously banished Dr. Doom to hell. I mean, they sent him to hell.
Yeah.
And he comes back because of this war in Asgard that I guess tears a fabric in the ozone or something he's able to escape through. But I was like, you can't even keep him in hell.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I mean, I know that it's a great dramatic thing to kill off a character, and you know, it's a great story beat to use, but it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Not anymore. Yeah.
No. So, you know, if the thing that the comic books could do, there's a lot of things they could do, to be honest, but they should really, editorial should stick to their guns and say, okay, if you're going to kill this character, you're killing this character. We're not reviving this character. And if you need someone to fit this type of character in the future, you're going to have to create a new one.
Well, before we go to Eric, Isaac, what do you think of the, I want to get a younger view here. What do you think of the trailer and what are you expecting out of the movie now?
I'm a child, so all I expect is fighting superheroes. It's what you all wanted as comics, and me being a kid in this age, I get to see it in motion.
True.
Don't have to use my imagination.
So, being a Spider-Man fan?
I'm still Team Cap, mainly because Ant-Man. Like, I don't know. Okay, here's the thing. I know how Spider-Man is in the comics and in the Ultimate Spider-Man TV show, but I'm not sure how they're going to play him out in the movie. Meanwhile, Ant-Man, I already saw his movie, so I know how they're going to, you know, how his character is going to be in the movie, so that's why I care more for him at the moment.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, Spider-Man is definitely the wild card.
Yeah, definitely so, especially since they're rebooting him again. God forbid they do another origin story. I'm going to just shoot someone if they do.
No, they're not going to story.
No, man. Uncle Ben's already dead. Exactly. You're not going to see that happen.
How many times
die? You may see a flashback, but I don't think that you'll see an origin story again. I think that this is the smartest thing that Sony has done with this character ever.
Mm-hmm. Uncle Ben might as well be in a Supernatural episode by now, because he's died so many times.
Yeah, true. Well,
I'm telling you, if they do try to do that origin story again, Tim, I'm going to borrow your car, and I'm driving to Hollywood to throw punch somebody. So
I'll be happy to pick you up on the way.
There we go. Okay. All right. So.
No, I'm sorry, man. That origin has played out. It is time to put that to bed for good.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
Nobody wants to see Spider-Man become Spider-Man again.
Nope. He's there. He's already Spider-Man. All right, so that brings me to you, Eric. Because of this trailer, because of the Civil War coming out, we kind of influenced you, or they've influenced you, somebody's influenced you, to go back and read the Civil War comics. Now, I will tell you, I read them when they came out 10 years ago, and loved the whole thing, and this was the one few moments that I bought every issue of every Marvel comic that came out for a year. So
I don't blame you.
Because the story came. I mean, normally, you know, I got my books. That's all I read. Well, I read every Marvel comic because I had to read the next episode. I had to find out what's going on because they had me hooked on this story. Mainly because of the tie-in with 9/11 that I knew about. You know, I knew that that's what they were doing. And I was like, oh, wow, how are they doing this? And so, but anyway, I had to read them 10 years ago. So I'm also, you know, 50-some-odd years old. Anyway, so I've forgotten a lot of stuff. You're rereading it. I kind of envy you right now. I might have to pick it up again. So rereading the Civil War comics, what are your thoughts?
Okay, well, first of all, the trailer is absolutely mind-blowing. It gives me chills every time I watch it. I've watched it, I'm not exaggerating, at least 10, 12 times, and every time it gives me chills. I am so, so looking forward to seeing this. And that's what made me decide to want to read these. And it's not rereading. This is me reading these for the first time.
Right.
I've never really read many superhero comics before. So this is a big deal for me to go back and pick up all of these. In fact, I didn't just get – I've got comics – you know, I've got Comixology on my Android tablet and, on my computer because it works on that as well. And I went back. I picked up The Road to the Civil War, which, you know, has got – God, everyone's in it. Well, not everyone, but, I mean, the Black Panther, Iron Man, obviously. Fantastic Four has a little bit of time in that. It's just collecting various issues from different franchises that follow the basic storyline of basically Tony Stark going through and trying to enlist people to join up, you know, to become responsible and become a cohesive unit that reports to the government, because he says it's coming. We know it's coming. We might as well get the jump on it and do this ourselves. Well, he has varying success with that, but then the actual event that you know starts the Civil War comic itself is a bunch of superhero wannabes that are trying to take down some actual superhero super bad guys, and they screw it up, and one of these bad guys has the ability of a nuclear blast, and they happen to be hiding out across the street from a school. And so these wannabes totally screw it up, and the nuclear guy goes nuclear and completely decimates the school, kills all these kids, and of course there's massive outrage among the public, and this is the inciting incident that brings this all about. Now, I don't know if that's the way they're going to go with it in the movie. Something tells me they're probably not, but it's probably going to be something of equal import. But going back to the first Avengers movie, I knew from the beginning that they were going to have a scene, at least one scene, where the two superheroes fight it out, because that's what you do when you put a bunch of superheroes in a movie. You know, who can beat who up?
Yeah.
If you guys remember when back in the days when we discussed that, I had a little bit of a problem with the way that they presented these internal conflicts between the characters. It felt manufactured to me. It didn't feel authentic. But this idea of, you know, of Tony Stark saying that we have to be responsible, you know, police have to report to, you know, have to report their actions. Everyone has to be responsible for their actions, and accidents do happen, and we've got to be responsible for that. And then you've got, on the other side, Captain America saying, you know, we can't be held responsible to some government subcommittee because they're, you know, sooner or later saying that we know better than they do, which most of the time is true. And that's perfectly personified in the in Marie Hill and S.H.I.E.L.D., because at least in the comic, they are completely fascist. I mean, she basically surrounds Cap and says, hey, you know, you're going to sign this or we're going to take you down. obviously that this is not the way to put this to superheroes, but this is the way they go about doing it. And they wind up turning more people off than they do. You know, if they put it to them a different way, it's possible they may have actually been able to do this without any conflict whatsoever. But I can see both sides of the story.
Right.
But in the comics, I wind up definitely taking Cap's side, because the fact that Tony Stark is just being a total dick, basically. And I mean, he's not allowing any leeway. And all these people that, you know, that he supposedly called friends he's just like turning on if they don't do what he tells them to do. It's a different Tony Stark than I'm used to seeing. You know, Tony Stark has always been kind of into himself more than everyone else. But when worse comes to worse, he does the right thing. Yeah. Whereas Cap is always looking out for the other guy.
Yeah.
So I haven't finished reading Civil War yet. And I you know, as I said, I finished reading The Road to the Civil War, which leads up to it. I read the first volume or whatever of Civil War, which basically ends with Cap going on the lam and Tony Stark saying that he's going to, you know, take over this initiative and make sure that everyone complies. And at that point I departed and went and read the New Avengers Civil War, which is amazing. I just finished it. And so I'm getting back into the Civil War proper now.
Okay.
But Tim Coker had actually told me, he's like, yeah, you should read the New Avengers Civil War, you know, which starts basically after the first volume of Civil War. And it's got Tony Stark and Captain America and a lot of the major Avengers in it, but it's also got Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. Mm-hmm. It's got Spider-Girl. It's got some of the B-level characters that we're guarantee we're not going to see in the movie.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they've got And they've all got very different perspectives and reasons for doing the things that they do. But my favorite is Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, especially Luke Cage's argument that basically, you know, Tony shows up at his house, you know, threatening him that, you know, he's got to sign up by midnight or they're going to come and get him. And he goes, and he makes the comparison to Mississippi in the 1950s. Which I was just like, oh, he went there. And yeah. Emmy was just perfect.
Yep.
And of course, you know, Tony's still, you know, rejecting, saying, no, this is different. But it's not. Not in the way that Tony's doing it. He's rounding them up just like, you know, black people got rounded up in the 50s in Mississippi. And he makes a good point.
Yeah.
And Jessica takes off with their baby girl to Canada. She has a great line where she's like, well, Canada, you know, she's trying to get Luke to come with her. And she's like, Canada needs superheroes, too. I love that line.
Yeah. Well, you know, flight is higher.
Well, you know, one of the things I just realized, Eric, I envy you right now because I had to wait, you know, episode or issue to issue to get this. Uh-huh. And you get them all at once to be able to just sit down at your leisure.
And I've been consuming them very, very quickly.
I think I'm going to go out and either go to my comic store because, you know, they're going to have Civil War, you know, the graphic, you know, trade paperbacks. You know, they're going to have those in stock right now because of the movie coming out. I think I'm going to go buy some because, see, I'm still... Digital comics, I read them a lot, but I read them to throw away. This right here, I want to read and keep. So I think I'm going to find the trade paperbacks. You now make me jealous.
Well, you know, Gil, I'm reading these on Comixology, which I mentioned to you before we started broadcasting. I love Comixology because it's just perfect for me. I can read it while I'm working or while I'm watching TV, and I love the way that it focuses on each panel, so there's no confusion. You know, it's like, you know, when you're reading a comic that you have those pages that are, like, shattered into different pieces, and you're like, oh, where do I start reading at?
Yeah.
There's none of that with Comixology. It you know, actually takes you through each panel, and it's a really great app. I mean, I can't say enough about it. But the artwork in Civil War, the Civil War proper, is so beautifully done. I don't know that I've ever seen such detailed work in comic books before, ever, except on the covers. And we've had this discussion too, where, you know, I'm like, well, why can't the artwork in the comic book look like the cover art? Well, in this particular instance, it does. I mean, every frame almost is just absolutely amazing. In the New Avengers Civil War, there's a few splash pages that are just really impressive. I you know, published one on Facebook not long ago that was
Daredevil. Yeah.
Yeah. Just dropping down with the full moon behind them. They're coming to save Luke Cage because, as Tony promised, that midnight, they bring out the cavalry to take down Luke Cage, and they're just about, you know, they just about got him beat down, and of course in comes his cavalry, which is, you know, Daredevil, Captain America, Falcon, and I think that's it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they, and of course they pull his butt out and they make off with one of the big super tanks that S.H.I.E.L.D. brought to take down Luke Cage, which I thought was a nice, funny touch. But the actual Civil War proper has amazing artwork, and I might actually go out and buy that myself just because it is such beautiful artwork, and it's something that I'll want to, you know, read again and again, I'm sure.
Yeah, my digital comics, they're I read them, they're done. But ones I really want to keep, I go to my comic shop and support them in the aspect. It's like, oh, well, this was a great read, great comics, great art. I'm going to buy it in hardcover. So,
yeah.
You know, you hear a lot of people say that digital comics are kind of going to make comic book shops go away. For me, that's not the case. It's I read the digital comic, I'm like, ooh, I need to own that.
Right.
And they probably lost some subscribers, the comic book stores that did, you know. But I don't think it's as bad as they thought it would be. But like I said, I envy you right now, Eric, because you're actually rereading those. I'm going to have to do that. I think I'm going to do it before the movie comes out. I got what we got about it. How many days we got?
Well, it's not till May.
I'm trying to think about.
But here's the thing is, I'm sure that, I mean, I don't know how much they're going to use of the comics in the movie. I know that it's going to be significantly different. For nothing else other than the fact that you can tell from the trailer that that Cap's, you know, Steve Rogers' friendship with Bucky is going to be a big part of the rift. And I'm hoping that they make it a little more even-handed, because like I said, in this, Stark is coming off as a real dick. I mean, in the comic, he's just, you know, it's like he's got no patience for anyone, and he just seems, you know, gung-ho on using the firepower on people that he used to call friends. And I'm hoping that's a little more subtle in the movie, and that, you know, you can kind of see both sides of the story.
Yeah.
But I'm sure I'm still going to wind up on Team Cap, just because, you know, Cap's always in the right. And he's, like I said, he's always looking out for the other guy. Tony Stark is always kind of looking out for himself.
Yeah, and the way I look at it is like, if you want to put it in today's political scene, Tony Stark will be Donald Trump, Captain America will be Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he is an old man.
True. See? All right. Well, you know, actually, Bernie Sanders is only like 4 years older than Trump. So, all right. Yeah, like I said, Civil War is going to be awesome. And we all know that. And we had to geek out on it because we'll be doing it online. So we had to do it on the podcast. A couple other things let's jump into real quick. Isaac and I have been binge watching some Netflix. And mainly, you know, I think it's, for me, it's out of boredom because I'm anxiously awaiting the new season of Daredevil, which we'll talk about that. But yeah, exactly. One of the things Isaac and I have been binge watching, I've seen a few episodes of this when it was on Adult Toonami. Swim. Adult Swim. Toonami, that's what it was, yeah. And they had their anime late at night, and it's Full Metal Alchemist. And I understand, after talking about this before the podcast, that Tim Matson actually likes this this series. Isaac and I just kind of decided to watch it, and wow. What are we on, episode 6?
Whatever episode is right after the Chimera episode.
Okay. So we're not far into it, but it's like, it's just a beautiful piece of anime. Full Metal Alchemist, it's the gist of the story. Two boys lost their mother, and they use alchemy to try to bring her back. Well, it doesn't work.
That's the one rule of alchemy that you can't do.
Yeah.
Can't bring a human back from the dead.
And so in the process, one kid loses his body, and his soul is stuck inside a suit of armor. And the other kid loses an arm and a leg, so he has a metal arm and a leg, thanks to a neighbor being able to do that. Again, it's anime, so you got to suspend some belief here. But... they go through and they want to become, there's actually state alchemists, the, you know, government run alchemists that, you know, that's how they're like major officers in the military, and they can use alchemy to bring down enemies and stuff like that. So anyway, we're just a few episodes into it, but the artwork is just beautiful. However, there are moments where it's like watching an episode of Pokemon, because they have there's one where he gets frustrated and all his arms and legs start flailing, and his face is like seven times in the frame.
It's because Edward always gets angry when people call him small.
Yeah. And so it's like,
the thing is, you need those moments of levity and kind of absurdity, because
otherwise it'd be dark.
It would be really dark. You would really be,
oh yeah.
You'd feel very oppressed by this thing if there wasn't some levity to it.
Well, yeah, like Isaac said, the last episode we watched, the Chimera episode. At first you say, Chimera, that sounds cool.
Oh, God, that is heartbreaking.
Yeah, the guy uses the soul of his daughter, who's like, what, six?
No, it's what is it, transmutation between the daughter and the dog.
Yeah, a daughter and a dog it's transmute together.
Combining both their souls and their appearance.
And he's telling the government that it's a chimera that he's created that can talk, when actually it's just he's blended these two people. Oh, it's gross, dark.
It's horrible. Yeah. Horrible to think that a parent would do that to a child.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
And it's one of the, it's like really sad when they realize, when you know, when you go in and you know you're building it. This is the interesting thing about watching this. You go in there and the whole time you're suspecting what happened with the first chimera this guy created, and then he goes in and there's the dog talking, and it's got that little kid voice, and you're like, oh,
it doesn't have a kid voice. What kind of kids have you been listening to?
Yeah.
Maybe if you like listen to the kid from The Grudge or something, yeah.
Well, it reminded me of you as a kid. Anyway. You know,
and listening to the kids that's smoking.
That's it. The smoking kids.
The kids that hit that hookah daily.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's got the quality, not the tone, but the quality. We're like, you my friend? You know, it's like, wow. And all of a sudden, your heart just sinks. So,
I mean, the first words it says is, why does it hurt, Edward?
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. And you know, that's one thing I've always
so bad. Guys, I gotta tell you, I have seen this. This is no exaggeration. I have watched. This is the anime I use to turn people on to anime.
Ah.
And I have watched this from beginning to end 6 times.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm glad I picked up on this one, because I can see why you watched it 6 times. I would not be surprised if we watch it more than once after we're done with it.
You will definitely. It rewards repeat viewing, because it really, it comes together on a second viewing, to be honest with you.
Ah, I can see that. I can see probably why. I mean, the storytelling in it is just great. I mean, you know, that's the thing about anime. You know, anime really, it's hit and miss, to be honest. I mean, there's some anime out there that's just like, why'd they waste that money? But at the same time, there's some anime out there is like, that is like better storytelling than I have ever heard. And, you know, and with the animation along with it that they have, they, you know, they go all out. And I mean, I remember seeing for the first time, Akira, and the animation in that movie was just like, wow, cutting edge. You know, it's like not cutting edge like 3D type thing, but cutting edge on the way the things that they animated, the blending of creatures and stuff. And this one goes right back to that. It reminds me of watching that Akira for the first time in my life. It's like the animation in this is just like, especially whenever there's monsters created, but even more so the stories are just great.
Not to mention, in almost every anime, the colors seem to just, there's a real wide spectrum of colors, even in a dark show like this. Like, the magic that he uses, it's a nice shade of purple.
Yeah.
And even, what was it? I don't remember what color it was, but there was a color that really stuck out, not red from blood, in the Chimera room. Like, I don't remember what it was. It was some of the creatures in the cages, I think.
Oh, yeah.
They had nice colors to them.
Yeah.
And for being creatures, you wouldn't expect that.
No.
You'd expect, like,
well,
black.
That's part of the reason that I really love anime, because I'm always looking for something new and different. I want to see something interesting, something I have not seen before. And it's the same with foreign films
right.
made, you know, in other countries. Their storytelling devices are different than ours in a slight way. And so you get to see things from a new point of view, or get to see a story in a way that you may not have thought of before.
Right.
One of my favorite things, I don't know if any of you have watched Old Boy. It was remade by Spike Lee, but that you can ignore that. But the original is by a Korean filmmaker, and I watched another one of his films called JSA, which is Joint Security something.
Area.
Joint thank
Security
you.
Area.
Have you seen it?
I have, but it's been a long time.
Well, it was refreshing to see, because it's a film about North Koreans and South Koreans, told by a Korean filmmaker, that it couldn't have been told by someone who isn't a Korean, I don't think, with the same amount of clarity and specificity, to see this country divided and see these people yearning to be a country that is together. It's just, it was a fresh perspective. I don't know how we ended up here from Full Metal Alchemist, but it's something I crave, is a new and interesting story. Well, always looking for that. And anime, man, it's endlessly creative. There are so many crazy stories out there that they tell.
Yeah.
That I'm endlessly fascinated by it. There's so many good stories.
Well, and I know a lot of people are going to pshaw this, but even when Isaac forces me to watch Dragon Ball Z, granted, yeah, that's corny. There's some silly
it's
things
all
going
corny.
On.
That's the point.
But
it's totally corny.
Yeah, but there are parts in the artwork in that show where it's like, wow, they just did that? Oh, okay. And then meanwhile, back, you know, Kamehameha, hey, whatever they say. What is it?
You mean Kamehameha?
Yeah, Kamehameha.
Even a
yeah,
location.
I'm thinking Mecha-Lekka Hai, Mecha-Heini Ho, too. But
okay.
Anyway.
That's a different attack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'll show some beautiful scenery or something transmogrifying or whatever, and then all of a sudden, okay, back to the action. You know, but it's still, even in that, it's the anime. I don't know what those artists are thinking over there, but I'm hoping they keep thinking it.
Now I can't think of anything else but, you want to know what?
This isn't even my final form!
So, yeah. So, I mean, really. But, I mean, oh, and another thing, you're talking about how foreign filmmakers, like, take for example here, Ju-on, the movie Ju-on. Not The Grudge.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now I'm disappointed.
But Ju-on, the actual Japanese film, that was creepy.
The original Japanese film.
Yeah. Not The Grudge. The Grudge was kind of corny.
What's the Ju-on about? Is that like
the
just
Grudge.
The kid?
It's The Grudge, but better told.
Okay.
Without Sarah Michelle Gellar. But it's like, I don't know. It's just that version, watching that. And yeah, I had to read the you know, read the American words.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I never even...
But, yeah, I mean, I had to read it, but still, it was a great story. But when they turned it into The Grudge, then it's like, eh.
The American one didn't even come to mind. I just thought of the Japanese one instantly, actually. So,
see, that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, I've been a fan of Asian cinema in general for a long time. I think it was probably Kung Fu that got me first into Asian cinema, but then I started getting into Asian horror and just Asian film in general, just the sensibilities. And it's not like all of Asia has the same sensibility. Like the Korean New Wave that you were talking about, Tim, has a very different feel to it than Japanese films, which have a different feel than Chinese films. But they've all got this, they all feel so different from what the storytelling is so different from what we're used to from, you know, and from not just, you know, American films, but just Western films in general. I mean, European films and American films. Asian films are like from a different planet almost. I mean, the way that they tell the stories is just like, wow, that's refreshing. I mean, it's just really interesting to watch, and there's so much there to mine through. I have to say that there are some anime that I really love. I mean, the moment I saw Ghost in the Shell, I was absolutely blown away by that, and that's probably always going to be my favorite anime. But I also love Blood, the Last Vampire. There's a anime called Metropolis, which has nothing to do with Fritz Lang's Metropolis. There's a few that I really like. But there's some things that keep me from enjoying a lot of anime, which is A, the goofy voices, which sound like they're being made for kids.
Oh, I know, right?
Really not. That really turns me off. And then the wayfish huge eyes that take up half the characters' faces. I don't like that style of drawing, and that seems to be like through a lot of anime.
Wait. So you're telling me that's not how they look in Japan?
Hey, God.
My life is a lie right now.
I thought that everyone in Japan went to high school and wore high school outfits.
Yeah.
And had no parents anywhere. That's very disturbing that's not the case.
I know, right?
So, but I wish that I could get past that, because I'm sure that there's some great stories in there.
Oh, there are.
If I could get past those things.
Full Metal Alchemist.
But it's just,
like...
Well, Eric, I would say that if you're having problems with the voices, I feel no shame in saying that I watch pretty much exclusively dubbed anime.
Why wouldn't you, to be honest?
And here's why. Because I get a lot of flack from anime fans in my family, even.
They're always terrible.
And if you're out there and want to contact us at NerdUp to tell me why I'm wrong, feel free.
You'll get a throat punch,
we'll talk
though.
About it. I will not throat punch you. This is a non-throat punching issue, because I can understand if you want to maintain the original experience of what the original creators wanted. There's something to be said for that. But I will never watch a live-action film dubbed. But I will pretty much always watch an animated film dubbed. Mm-hmm. Because a live-action film, that's the actor's voice. That's the person you're seeing. You're seeing their face. You're seeing the way they are moving, their face and their body. And their language is a key component to that performance.
Yep.
And so I don't believe you can substitute someone's voice without losing something. But an animated character, this is not their actual voice.
Right.
This is someone else voicing this character. And so I don't see any harm in subbing that third-party voice out for an English or Western voice.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel that you lose anything, and technology now allows them to kind of alter the what they call the lip flaps of the character, so that it's in time with this Western voice. It doesn't look weird. So yeah. I mean, I would really honestly suggest, Eric, that you watch it dubbed rather than subbed,
because they don't do the wacky voices so much in the dubbed versions.
It's hit and miss. It really depends on what type of anime you're watching.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're watching kind of a a slice of life harem comedy, you're probably going to have a lot of voices that are not, you're not going to be happy with.
Yeah,
they're not going to make much sense.
Yeah.
No, they're going to be kind of screechy, and you know, you're not going to have a good time.
Plus, you got to look at it this way. One of the things in Japan, the tough guy, they're going to have the higher voice than here in America. We have, you know, the tough guy's got this deep, deep voice. Well, the tough guy in Japan is not necessarily going to have that. And that kind of carries over, too, when you're reading, when you're watching these.
Yeah, our cultural assumptions are a little bit different over here than over there. Yeah.
I think another thing is that since it, like, stems from the manga originally, since you're reading it originally, you have a voice in your head, kind of like reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a voice in your head, so it'll never... Even if it's subbed or dubbed, it'll never sound the same as if you read it first.
True.
And they're, honestly, the dubs are getting better and better because the Americans are finding better and more capable talent out there, vocal talent. There's a lot of people now that do voiceover work.
Yeah, they're taking it more seriously, too, you know? Or more, you know, they're being more serious about the productions of these.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah.
They should. I mean, you'll still run across the same... You'll hear Monica Rial so many times that you will know the second that a character opens her voice, is like, oh, shit, that's Monica Rial again. And, you know, certain voice actors work in pretty much every single anime for some reason.
Yeah.
But they're good. They're in there for a reason.
Well, it's interesting you said that, because, I mean, I'm the same way. If live-action films... for the most part, I will always go for a subtitled version over a dubbed version, unless the subtitles are just so poorly done that it's distracting, which does happen a lot with Asian films. If it's being put out by like an Asian company that's the English subtitles are like an afterthought, sometimes they're just so badly done that you just...
Yeah.
If there's a dubbed version, you're better off with it. But Ghost in the Shell, I originally saw... with subtitles, and I the version I have on Blu-ray has both a subtitle version and with the original Japanese voices and a dubbed version, and I find that I do actually prefer the dubbed version over the subtitles. Again, if you watch it at the same time with the subtitles and the dubbed version, there's a vast difference in the dialogue that's in the subtitles and as opposed to what's being said.
It depends. And, like you said, it depends on the company that's doing the release. Sometimes the difference is not very big.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, a perfect example here. I watch. Is it Tenchi the Killer? The guy that's got his mouth slit like the Joker?
Ishii.
Yeah.
Oh, Ishii the Killer. Yeah.
I watched that and I watched the American dub, and then I still put the subtitles on. They never matched up through that whole movie, and I'm like, I got frustrated. Yeah. I'm like, well, which one do I pay attention to? So I finally just turned off the, I listened to the dub, and then I watched it again with just the English, and I got two different stories almost, but it's still... interesting to see that.
One was a heartfelt comedy.
It was.
Yeah, Ishii the Killer.
In which Ishii became a real boy at the end.
So
that's a hardcore Miike film.
Oh, is it though?
That one. Yeah, I can only recommend that to really people who've seen other Miike films and know what to expect.
That requires a certain taste from someone.
Yeah. My nephew, he had a special metal case box set. He goes, watch this, but I'm going to warn you, it's not what you expect. And I watched it.
There's no way to prepare someone for that movie.
Yeah, and I watched it, I'm like, wow. So, but anyway, and you know what? Here's the interesting thing about, like I said, we're watching this on Netflix. Netflix, at least for this series, for Full Metal Alchemist, we can turn on the actual animation or the Japanese voices. Listen to the actual voices and then have the subtitles, or we can go to the English dubbed, either one. And I love that about Netflix. And we went and sampled, it was
Full Metal Alchemist. It was
the Chimera scene. We sampled what the actual voices sound like.
The Chimera sounded the exact same, but Edward, he sounded like a girl.
Yeah. It was a girl doing the voice for sure, and it's like, wait a minute, I like the American version better.
That's one reason I don't really like the subbed versions or the original versions, is because usually a younger age is almost always a girl voice. If it's like below 13, they're going to be voiced by a girl.
But that's what I like
about... That's crazy. Next thing you know, you're going to tell me that Bart Simpson's voiced by a girl. Come on.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
That's crazy talk. Crazy.
So, but anyway, so all right. So, Full Metal Alchemist, you got a recommendation from Isaac and I. Sounds like Tim, you got a recommendation for it for sure,
wholeheartedly.
Okay, so Eric, that means you have to watch it.
Yeah, I may have to check it out.
And I'll tell you what, they're what, about 24-minute episodes? I think that's what they are.
I think so. Yeah.
And they're, I mean, it's amazing how much storytelling is in each episode, too. So, all right, so that brings us to the next Netflix adventure, Daredevil, Season 2, coming out soon. And by the time this podcast is up, it'll be up, and we'll have binge-watched it all weekend long.
Wait, so you're telling me there's a Netflix show about Evel Knievel?
Wow, that's amazing.
But, okay, so this season they're bringing in Punisher, that was already known. Surprised me, they're bringing...
And Elektra.
Yeah, that's what surprised me, they're bringing in Elektra. I'm like... Okay, but now I will tell you this. The Jennifer Garner Elektra movie, I liked, but I didn't like it as an Elektra movie. It could have been just like, maybe generic, a Jason Bourne type movie or something. But as Elektra, it's like, no, you didn't quite capture the character. But I want to know how they're going to, I mean, from the suit that they're showing on the trailer, it looks like they're going to capture the suit of the character anyway. And the love-hate relationship between Daredevil and her. There's a history that, how are they going to tell that? I mean, I guess they got a whole season to do it in, because they're combining that and Punisher. What do you guys think? You guys ready for this new Daredevil season?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Can't wait.
Tim Matson, you're not a fan of Punisher. How's this going to affect your Daredevil watching?
He could drop off the face of the earth, and I would never lose him out of sleep at all. He could take Venom and Carnage with him, and I would be a happy person.
Okay, now you're stepping into dangerous territory.
I knew that would get a reaction.
Throat punches coming to Carolinas now.
Throat punches coming to Carolina, yeah.
In this angsty teen throat punch.
I mean, who really gives a crap about the Punisher? This guy, it's a terrible character created during a time in comics that is rife with terrible characters. I mean, it's just... Who cares? I mean, really, who cares? It's just I can't say enough how irrelevant that character is to comics. I mean, he really does not belong.
He's like Batman, but with instead of technology, he's got guns. He's like Deadpool without the funny.
Yeah, I mean, he's a dude that just runs around killing people.
Yeah.
He's decided that I know right from wrong. I need to live. And who needs to die? And I'm just going to go kill people now. No, thank you. I'm not interested in that. I don't subscribe to that point of view. I don't want to watch a character with that point of view. I'm not interested. But having said that, I loved the first season of Daredevil. And of course, I'm going to watch this.
Oh, yeah.
And I have every hope in the world that they're going to make a Punisher that I will at least not... cringe at.
You know, I was thinking about this. You kind of brought this up about Punisher. You know, his first appearance was in 1974. And I'm trying to think the times in 1974 that created the need to have a Punisher comic.
Post Vietnam.
Yeah, but that.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of you know, anger and.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's like, wow, you know, it's like what spawned this guy? And I guess John Romita Jr. and Jerry Conway. That's it. The Punisher is one of those. Every once in a while, they do a story arc that. Is interesting, but it's more like I'll go back to Jason Bourne. It's like a spy thriller, and not necessarily a comic book for me. And but bringing him into Daredevil, like you said, Tim, you know, we're gonna watch Daredevil. They did so great on the first season that, you know, there's no way you can say, well, Punisher's in it.
Absolutely.
So I think I'm with you in, like, let's, okay, make it so that you're not going to make me.
They earned a lot of leeway with me. They earned a huge amount of leeway.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm willing to give them pretty much anything. And they're using two of my least favorite characters, honestly. But I don't care about either of these characters, really.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of thematic material and a story arc, it really, the Punisher is a nice contrast to Daredevil and his struggle, because he's really, really trying not to kill people.
Right.
Whereas the Punisher, that's what he's all about.
And
so
Elektra.
I can definitely see an interesting story arc for at least a season. Now, if this goes beyond, if those characters remain in the show beyond this season, I'm not sure how that's going to work, but I can definitely see how they could work them in for you know, the arc over a single season.
Yeah, and then make appearances.
I will give you that, Eric. I do, I agree with you, and I do absolutely love that notion of Daredevil being one bad day away from being exactly the same Punisher. There is something to be said about that, and I do think that I'm interested in seeing the story of someone who resists that tug.
Yeah.
I'm just not interested in someone who succumbed.
Right, yeah, exactly. There you go. And I think this is going to provide that other side, because before we saw the just becoming the hero, now we're going to see, can he stay the hero? I think that, yeah. I think that if they do it right, absolutely, that'll be one season perfect for it, but and then maybe make appearances every so often, because they've already introduced him into the Marvel Comics universe, and, you know, go from there. But, yeah, I think I'm with you guys. It's like, do we really need him? But then, Eric, I think you just brought it out. I think this will be a great part of the story if they do it right. And the other thing is Elektra. I mean, just like the Punisher, she's a trained assassin. That's what she does. She's hired by governments to assassinate, you know?
These guys are just filled with edge. Like, I might cut myself on that.
So edgy.
It is edgy. But, yeah.
That we'll 90s see. Extreme.
Yeah, and plus you got to realize, you know, the actor playing Punisher, you know, John Bernthal, Shane from Walking Dead.
Yeah.
He looks the part more so than more so than Dolph Lundgren did back in the 80s when they did Punisher. But yeah, he looks the part, and I think that that's a good thing.
There was another Punisher movie that came out, like, it's been less than 10 years ago. That I remember enjoying just because it was so over the top, gleefully violent.
Yeah.
I mean, just like really gory. I can't remember the name of it. But it was a different actor playing the Punisher.
Yeah, Thomas Jane played him as Punisher Warzone. Yeah.
Yes, Punisher Warzone.
Yep.
And I did enjoy that just because it is just, I mean, just deliberately bloody as hell.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the one thing I like about it, if nothing else, that skull logo of his is just cool. I just like that.
It's a cool logo.
It's a cool logo. All right. So I guess we can all say that Daredevil is going to be met with glee, and hopefully they'll keep that glee up.
Why would they put glee in a show like Daredevil?
You know, this is the musical season.
Yeah, I know. I hate it now. I'm not watching it.
I'd love to see Daredevil beat up the cast of Glee. I think that'd be great.
I would watch that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Oh, now I know why they have Punisher. They're going to finally end the cast of Glee.
You could end the cast of Glee. That'd be great. Maybe you could do, like, Daredevil and line them all up and do a one-shot. That'd be beautiful. Well, Deadpool.
Did
I say Daredevil?
Yeah, you did. That's okay, though. I knew what you meant. Yeah, exactly. Line up the one-shot. There you go.
That's the only episode. The rest are all just black screens.
All you need. All right.
In memoriam.
You know, I'm also very excited to see more Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, but I realize that we're probably not going to see any more of them until they do the Defenders.
Yeah.
I only want Iron Fist, please.
Yeah.
And I'm all about Luke Cage, man. I think that guy, I can't wait to see an entire season with that dude as Luke Cage. That's going to be awesome.
Wasn't he awesome as Luke Cage?
He was great.
Yeah. I thought out of Jessica Jones... Yeah, I enjoyed this. I enjoyed the series 100%. I did, but the Luke Cage just totally. Every time he was in an episode, I'm like, yes. It was like, I don't know. It was an amazing episode for me when he was there. It's kind of like when
Have you seen the new Power Man and Iron Fist comic?
No, haven't.
Oh, dude, it's pretty awesome. I would definitely check it out.
Okay.
I actually met the artist for that in Charlotte a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really cool dude.
You know, Power Man and Iron Fist. Those have always been like sub characters for me. I loved it when they made appearances, but I never picked up a comic of theirs. They've done several runs here and there of the two together or separate, but I've always looked at them as sub characters. But you know, now that I've seen this Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, how much he impressed me, that might give me more oomph to pick up that. When did that start? When the new run start?
I think it was week before or last when the first issue came out.
Nice. Okay, good.
There's only been one issue on the stand so far. I think the second one should be hitting pretty quickly anyway.
Okay.
Well, I think it's a monthly title, so.
Okay, I'm going to definitely check that out then. Because, yeah, like I said, Luke Cage and the Jessica Jones series totally sold me on Luke Cage himself.
Go online and take a look at the artwork, because I think you'll really dig it. It's got a real, I don't know, man. There's a real different vibe to it. I actually picked up three prints by that guy at the convention because I really dig his artwork. I think it's really cool. And I've got to look it up because I got to tell you guys what the guy's name is because he deserves a shout out.
I've been binge watching Gurren Lagann, and from what I talked about before the podcast, I know Tim's watched half of it probably.
Half. Yeah.
Okay. I've really enjoyed the series, but there's just something about friggin' too many anime boob jokes. I'm a teenager and all, but that there's such thing as too much. There really is.
See, guys, I'm not the only one that thinks about that there's too much boobs. Mine's comic books, his is anime.
But it's about giant fighting robots, and that's pretty much pretty cool. Pretty much pretty cool, yeah. That's really...
Giant fighting robots and boobs.
Yeah, that would probably sum it up, to be honest.
It pretty much does, yeah.
I haven't even seen the second half, and I know that's probably summing it up.
What was the name of that one again?
Gurren Lagann. It's...
Spell that.
Gurren Lagann.
Okay, a lot of N's in there. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I remember I saw that on your list on Netflix, and I'm like, well, now that you got me on Full Metal Alchemist on a... hooked on it. I love the anime selection on Netflix. There we go.
They don't have trash. They have good.
Oh no, they got trash on there.
They don't have mostly no, trash. Like most.
There's
anime.
Some trash on there. Believe me.
Yeah. I saw a couple, but yeah, not mostly trash. There you go. Good for clarifying that. So I guess one final thing we've got to talk about tonight, and this is Tim Mattson has discovered virtual reality, and we'll never see him again.
Possibly not.
All right.
Before we get onto that. Oh, Sanford Green. Sanford Green is the artist that did the artwork for Power Man and Iron Fist. So look for it.
Sanford Green?
Sanford Green. He's from our neighbor state, South Carolina. But yeah, man, on to some virtual reality news. This is the year of virtual reality, apparently, because the PlayStation just announced that their version of virtual reality drops in October. The HTC Vive drops in May or June, and the Oculus should be streaming in May sometime as well. So all the companies are hitting the ground running. I ended up having to get a new phone, so Best Buy was kind enough to give away the Samsung Gear VR headset with the new phone. And it's not something that's going to absolutely rule your world, but man, it's quite an experience, I have to say.
Better than the Oculus Rift?
Well, Eric and I were lucky enough to try a little demo at Indie PopCon a couple years ago. Do you remember that, Eric?
Yeah, but the demo that they were using was pretty lame.
It was pretty weak. I mean, it was like Atari 2600 kind of, you know, I mean, that's being overly harsh on it. But, I mean, it was nothing to write home about. But I will have to say it was a fun proof of concept to be able to put on that headset and feel like you were sitting in the cockpit of,
right,
admittedly, a very crudely rendered spaceship. But nonetheless, that feeling was there, that sense of other space was there. And to me, that was a really good sign, because if something this primitive could give you that sense of, I've traveled to a whole different space just by putting on this headset, that I thought that was pretty exciting. And to be honest, the Samsung headset has done that one better, in that there are actual some fun experiences and fun games to play on this. Very basic, again, but I hold out a lot of hope that once you get your hands on an actual Oculus or Vive, that you're going to have some amazing experiences.
So can you go surfing with in Thailand with Wesley Snipes yet?
Oh, gosh, wouldn't that be great? No, I mean, there are some video type things. Like there's a Cirque du Soleil experience where you can put on a headset. And now keep in mind, this is not something that's tracked externally.
Okay.
This relies only on the internal gyroscopes and magic gnomes inside your phone to tell it where it is. So you are limited to sitting in one place and basically turning your head. Mm. It's basically your head taking the place of a 360-degree camera.
Right, yeah.
Okay. So you can't move around in the space, but you can look in a full 360 degrees. So there's that. I mean, you can see a very brief performance by them. There's a musical artist, a guy's name that I don't remember, who plays. You're in his apartment and he's playing the piano, and that's kind of cool. You look around, see his dog, silly things like that. But to be honest, the most fun that we had with it was with this game that is called Keep Talking and No One Explodes. And it is a really fun little game. It is really addictive because it's a two-player game.
Oh.
It's a VR two-player game. One person has the headset on, and the other person is sitting there with a sheaf of papers. So the guy with the headset is a bomb disposal expert. The guy with the papers is Control, that he's talking to over the headset. And Control has all the instructions on how to defuse a bomb. And to defuse the bomb, the guy who is in the room with the bomb has to describe what he's seeing to the other person, and that person has to find the correct way to defuse this bomb that he's describing.
Oh, wow.
And so while the timer is ticking down, you're frantically saying, okay, there are three batteries on the sides of the side of the briefcase, and there's a panel with a blue wire, red wire, and a white wire, and there's a button that says abort. And the guy's like, okay, what color is the button? The button's red. Okay, now push the button, but don't release it. And then cut this wire. I mean, it's really fun.
Huh.
And all the while, the timer is ticking down and you're getting all sweaty and nervous, and the guy's like yelling instructions. It's really fun. If you allow yourself to get into it, it honestly was so engrossing that I felt, because I was sitting in a chair. I'm sitting in a chair that is, I can rotate.
Okay.
And I honestly at times found myself trying to put my hands down on the virtual desk that's in that I'm seeing in this headset. It was so immersive that I honestly felt like I should be able to just put my hands down on the desk. When I went to turn the chair, I reached out to put my hand on the desk to push away against the desk just involuntarily. Without really thinking about it. So again, this is really basic, guys. I mean, the graphics are not, they're good, but they're not mind blowing. Like, oh my God, I'm really there. It's very cartoony, very, very basic, like PlayStation 2 kind of graphics. And there is a distinct kind of screen door effect, you know, in the lens. But this is all running on a phone.
Right, yeah, that's what I was thinking here. It's like, you're the whole time you're telling me this, is like, Tim, this is a phone. You made phone calls.
I know, guys. This is amazing. This is a device I can carry around in my pocket.
Yeah.
And it can play magic games and make me think I'm in a different place. this is so, I have such high hopes for VR now.
Ah.
I was not 100% sold on this first generation. I really do think VR is the future for gaming. I really do. But I didn't really think this first generation was really going to be the thing that gets everybody excited. And now I kind of think it is.
Yeah, now it's on your phone like that. So, yeah, you just imagine what PlayStation's going to be releasing. So
traveling to Mars? Psh, nah, travel to Mars in your virtual world.
Absolutely. I would give anything to be able to virtually experience what it's like to be on Mars if they film that with the Mars rover. Yeah. I would be thrilled to feel like I'm standing on Mars.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Or just to
Here's the thing though, is you don't have to lay out the goggles. Well, the robot goggles.
The Samsung?
They came with his
cardboard.
Yeah, they came with your phone, but you can buy them yourself. And I bought a few months back, I bought the cardboard, literally cardboard version of that. It cost me like $20, and it's, you know, it's not very sturdy, but it's made of cardboard, and my, you know, my Samsung Note 4 fits into it, which, you know, the Note 4 has a huge screen anyway, so it works very well for these purposes. And I've downloaded, there's tons of applications out there you can download for it. Most of them aren't very good, but the roller coasters I like a lot. If you get a chance to try, there's several roller coasters you can download. Some of them are actually like live footage from like Cedar Island, or what is it?
Cedar Point.
And then there's virtual, you know, created graphics versions, but they're very immersive and a lot of fun. And like you, it's like, I can see the potential for great things with this, but for right now, it's more of just a gimmick. But, you know, people that I've let use it and try it on, are just, really blown away by it. And especially kids are very addicted to it. Let's do it. Let me do it again. Do it again. It's definitely a lot of fun, and it gives you a taste for VR for those who haven't had a chance to try it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a very low cost way to actually get to experience it.
Yeah. And like you guys said, this is on your phone. Just imagine when they get the console version that you're going to be able to just plug into your PlayStation 4 or whatever.
I got to fess up. I actually, after playing around with this for a few days, I went ahead and put in my pre-order for the HTC Vive.
Uh-huh.
I'm buying into this. I really think that this is going to be worth it to have this experience.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We need to wrap up the podcast. This is a long one. I'm tired, and I got some editing to do. I got to put in all the music, commercials, and everything else. So let's close out the podcast. First of all, I want to tell everybody there's lots of ways to support the podcast. You can buy our merchandise. You got T-shirts, messenger bags, everything. If you ever see me at a con, you're going to see a Nerd Up Podcast messenger bag with me at all times because it makes me look so cool. I'm telling you, it makes me look cool. That's about the only thing that does. But anyway, also there are other ways to help us, pay for our costs of putting this thing on. Mainly, all I ask is that we have storage fees covered and we're good to go. You can click on the Amazon banners, the iTunes banners on the nerduppodcast.blogspot.com page. Also, before and after each episode, there could be commercials. And those commercials, if you just dial the number that's on there and you connect to the operator, we get paid like 10 cents. So
there's your 10 cents.
There's my 10 cents for coverage. I mean, but if you just call the phone number, but some of them may be interesting. There's some website design type services, whatever. But if those commercials. So there's all sorts of ways. Just pay attention. We appreciate your help. You can even just donate through PayPal on our website. Once again, that's nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. Again, all we ask is storage fees, just like paying for a comic book. And we're happy. Eventually, I'm going to have to be able to pay, everybody here. Except for Isaac. He's slave labor. So
I'm being forced into this against my will. Please help. These are not my real parents.
So, but
everybody says that.
I mean, nobody makes money on podcasting. We just like to cover our storage fees. Anyway, so that's it for the podcast. One last thing. Oh, yeah, if you need to get a hold of any of us on the best way, I think, is Twitter for me, because it's so anonymous. Well, not anonymous, but it's not intrusive. There we go. So you can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson.
And I'm Eric. You can reach me at Eric Bill.
And I'm Tim Mattson. You can reach me pretty much on anything at Tim Gone Mad.
I'm Isaac Wilson. And I'm going to be starting doing more stuff on YouTube, so EvilBacon88 is that account. Also, I'll more likely respond to you there, so.
Yeah, YouTube. And it's also your Twitter handle, too, so that makes sense. All right, so I guess it's good to keep everything normal and everything the same. So, speaking of normal and the same, that's it for the podcast this time around. As we say each and every week, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy. Nerd up.
Man, I had a rough night's sleep. Ugh, boy. Whew. I got a letter from the IRS yesterday, and I just couldn't sleep. Man, I'm dying here. Somebody help me.
IRS problems affect more than just your finances. If you're ready to take back control of your life and you owe more than $10,000, you need to call the Tax Doctor. Their expert staff can immediately protect you from the IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. The IRS has recently released new programs geared in helping struggling taxpayers, where you may qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call the Tax Doctor right now. See if you qualify to pay less. 800-917-8611. 800-917-8611. 800-917-8611. Again, 800-917-8611.